This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, President Obama unveils new carbon emissions rules. California wildfires get hotter as the state's four-year drought continues.
It's a big concern, and a lot of us are losing sleep. If you look around here, you can see trees that have been here for decades.
We'll tell you about some keys to happiness, and a hip-hop controversy breaks out over just who said what. These stories and more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. President Obama says there is no greater challenge to future generations than a changing climate. To address that major concern, Mr. Obama issued an urgent call to action Monday by unveiling new regulations aimed at cutting carbon pollution that comes from the nation's power plants. The president's Clean Power Plan would reduce U.S. reliance on coal-fired electricity and move the country further towards renewable energy. Under the plan, power plants would reduce their carbon emissions by 32% below 2005 levels by the year 2030. The plan cuts emissions about 9% deeper than a preliminary version of the regulations released last year. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with Eric Pica, president of the environmental advocacy group Friends of the Earth, about these new, tougher power plant emissions limits.
First, this is a historic effort, a historic day. This is the first time that the Environmental Protection Agency in the United States is going to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. Now, what the rule says is that we are going to reduce these greenhouse gas emissions by relying on renewable energies such as wind and solar, energy efficiency, as well as better pollution techniques to capture the CO2 that comes out of a coal-fired power plant.
Now, according to the information that I have, individual states will be responsible for coming up with their own plans to meet this target, but then under the new plan, they'll get two more years to do so, and it goes in effect by 2022.
Yes.
Do we have a potential problem with individual states coming up with their own plan?
Yeah, and so we will have problems with individual states coming up with plans, but also there will be a number of states, anywhere from a dozen to 20 states, that will try to sue the Environmental Protection Agency, saying that the EPA has overstepped its regulatory bounds and that they don't need to provide any plans whatsoever. And so we'll see a rash of litigation, probably starting today, but certainly over the next couple years, trying to oppose the Environmental Protection Agency's rule.
There has been rhetoric from Capitol Hill again and again and again during the Obama administration accusing the president of waging an alleged war on coal. Mitch McConnell, who is now the Senate Majority Leader, is one of the people who has used that phrase. It seems to be coming primarily from coal states. Could you amplify on that?
Yeah, and so, look, we have a problem. We have a climate crisis. Temperatures are warming. The last 14 years have seen the highest temperatures in the United States on record. And this is primarily caused by the burning of coal and oil. And if we're going to solve the climate crisis, we're going to have to end our use of coal. And so whether you call it a war on coal or a fight for our very existence on this planet, we have to reduce coal. And what this rule does is it says that we are going to reduce by 32% the amount of greenhouse gas pollution that comes from coal-fired power plants. And that means that we will be shutting down coal-fired power plants and we will be mining less coal in the United States.
That was Eric Pica, president of the environmental advocacy group called Friends of the Earth, speaking with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. Time now for social media reaction to the announcement. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio with the latest. Hello, G.
Hi, Ray. President Obama sent out 7 tweets in total after the announcement. Here's the first one. Mr. Obama wrote, "Today we're announcing America's Clean Power Plan, the most important step we have ever taken to combat climate change. Here are the facts." That's been retweeted more than 4,500 times and marked as a favorite nearly 10,000 times. He went on to lay out some of the facts to support the plan. He wrote that by 2030, carbon pollution from power plants will go down significantly, and there will be 90,000 fewer asthma attacks among children. He also said families will save on energy bills. Mr. Obama is on Twitter at POTUS.
All right, I see. Now, what about his last tweet of the day?
The last one was more motivational than factual. He wrote, "I refuse to condemn our kids to a planet that's beyond fixing. Let's meet this challenge and hashtag act on climate together."
How popular was that hashtag?
Quite popular, Ray, because it was used in about 27,000 tweets in the last 24 hours. But hashtag clean power plan was used even more and was a worldwide trending hashtag on Twitter. More than 38,000 tweets used that hashtag.
So are you saying the name of the plan is actually more widely used than the slogan?
Exactly. Now I want to mention that President Obama is not alone in trying to save the environment. He has a very influential figure on the same page with him at the Vatican. About a month ago, Pope Francis tweeted, "A great challenge, stop ruining the garden which God has entrusted to us so that all may enjoy it." He's on Twitter at Pontifex and an outspoken advocate of environmental issues. Ray?
Well, that just about covers it, G. Thank you for the update. Social media reporter G. Abby Lee. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. And you can also comment on our website at www.voanews.com. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Greece took another step toward restoring the normal functioning of its troubled economy on Monday, when its stock market reopened for the first time in more than a month. But share prices tumbled in Athens as Greece tries to emerge from its major debt crisis. International Edition's Michael Lippin spoke with business correspondent Alexis Christophorus in New York about how bad the sell-off was.
The Greek stock market saw the most dramatic wave of selling in decades after the exchange opened for the first time in 5 weeks. We saw bank stocks lead that plunge. They were down about 30%, and that's the daily maximum allowed by the Athens Stock Exchange. The benchmark ASE index sank about 16% in Athens after sliding as much as 23%. And adding insult to injury, Greece's manufacturing industry shrank at a record pace last month as we saw demand collapse. So all of these things work together to have investors really running for the exits the moment they had access to their money in the stock market. You'll remember the Greek government was forced to shut down banks, its stock market, and impose capital controls in late June before ultimately accepting a deal for bridge financing to avoid defaulting.
Right. And something else that fell today, although perhaps not as much, was the price of oil at a four-month low. So what's going on with that?
That's right. Crude oil closing at $45.17 a barrel. And we saw Brent fall 4.5% to $49.84 a barrel. It's the same old story, unfortunately, a sort of a perfect storm here, a worldwide oil glut, uncertainty over economic growth, combining to send oil futures to a fresh four-month low. Oil was vulnerable to further pressure after last week's downbeat assessment from ExxonMobil and Chevron, and also a rise in the U.S. oil rig count. And add in weak economic data from China over the weekend, and you've got a lot of pressure on prices.
Something else that might have been pressuring prices are comments from the Iranian oil minister. What did he have to say?
That's right. Iran's oil minister says that within a week of sanctions being lifted, his country can comfortably increase oil production by 500,000 barrels a day and by 1 million barrels a day within a month's time. And also, as an aside, Iran says it plans to buy as many as 90 planes per year from Boeing and Airbus to revamp its antiquated fleet once Western sanctions are finally lifted. And Iran plans to finance those purchases through leasing, foreign loans, and state funding.
Business correspondent Alexis Christophorus in New York, speaking with International Edition's Michael Lippin. A wildfire raging through Northern California doubled in size, threatening homes and businesses while spreading in other U.S. northwestern states. The blaze has scorched about 24,000 hectares of land and destroyed 24 homes in the Lower Lake area located north of San Francisco. California authorities have called for more than 12,000 residents to evacuate the area. Many of the wildfires are sparked by lightning and spread through a combination of dry trees and heavy winds. Governor Jerry Brown declared a state of emergency and ordered the state's National Guard to help with disaster recovery. California is also facing its fourth year of drought. City dwellers and farmers are both feeling its impact. Some experts say the state's water system was not created to handle long periods of drought. Elizabeth Lee has more from Ventura County, an agricultural region just northwest of Los Angeles.
We're picking the largest of the fruit.
The drought in California worries almost every farmer in the state, including Ventura County avocado grower Ed McFadden.
It's a big concern, and a lot of us are losing sleep. If you look around here, you can see trees that have been here for decades.
John Christ with the Farm Bureau of Ventura County says what happens to the crops in California has impacts that extend far outside the state.
Well, we grow half the nation's fresh fruits and vegetables.
Chris says the drought has become a hardship for many farmers in the state.
Agriculture already had been cut back. There were almost no deliveries from the state and federal projects last year, and 500,000 acres was left fallow. That's a real impact.
State and federal agencies control the water used by many of the farms in California. That water comes from places such as Northern California and the Colorado River.
I would say the system for capturing, storing, and transporting water in California that we have, which, you know, a lot of the big stuff dates back to the 50s, 60s, was great at the time given what was known. But obviously we live in a different world than we did then.
The water system has depended on melted snowpack as the water source and was not engineered for long periods without precipitation, says Stephanie Pincel of the Institute of the Environment and Sustainability at University of California, Los Angeles.
In the 20th century, there was more rainfall than historically. And so we engineered these systems to manage that. And we did not anticipate the kind of growth in agriculture or in populations or climate change.
Change that means warmer, drier weather.
I think it is inevitable. You know, we need to look at different ways of storing water.
Pincel suggests looking at California's groundwater basins.
We really need to use what we have in the ground and those groundwater basins to create what they call conjunctive water management, surface and groundwater together.
Ed McFadden says, unlike many other agricultural regions in the state, farms in Ventura County depend almost entirely on groundwater. He is doing better than his counterparts in other counties.
So far, we've been doing pretty well. We've got a good crop that we're picking this year.
But the water table is approaching historic lows. Farmers here say it is critical to carefully and fairly manage the water they have, a necessity for all farmers in the state, regardless of where their water comes from. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Ventura County, California.
The world athletic community is reacting to reports that 146 medals, including 55 golds at the Olympics and at World Championships between 2001 and 2012, were won by athletes with suspicious blood test results. Various sporting organizations are calling for a thorough investigation, as we hear from VOA's Steve Herman.
The president of the International Olympic Committee says there is no solid foundation for the widespread doping allegations. Speaking to reporters at the conclusion of the IOC summit in Kuala Lumpur, Thomas Bach Monday urged patience until the outcome of an investigation by the impartial World Anti-Doping Agency.
The IOC will follow its zero-tolerance policy and will do everything to protect the clean athletes. First of all, now it's in the hands of WADA as the competent center of both sports and governments to deal with this, and we have full confidence in their procedure.
The chief of WADA, Craig Reedy, calls the allegations wild and wide and says the reports aired by a German broadcaster and published in a British newspaper Sunday will once again shake the foundation of clean athletes worldwide. The media outlets say they obtained access to the results of 12,000 blood tests from 5,000 athletes in the IAAF database after a leak by a whistleblower. More than 800 of the athletes recorded one or more abnormal test results, defined as a result that had less than one chance in 100 of being natural, the president of the International Association of Athletics Federations told IOC members Monday that behind the doping abuse report is a campaign to redistribute medals. Russia's sports minister, Vitaly Mutko, also suggests there is an ulterior motive behind the allegations. Russian athletes had by far the most suspicious results, followed distantly by Ukraine, Morocco, Spain, Kenya, and Turkey. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
Coming up, a look at some keys to happiness. This is VOA.
This is Greenbeat for a healthier planet.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon recently visited Norway in an attempt to raise awareness of the upcoming climate change conference.
This looks magnificent, but at the same time, I'm alarmed that there are so many cracks it may soon break. They are melting very rapidly.
The United States, European Union, and China announced their proposed carbon pledges for the conference. But Samantha Smith of the World Wildlife Fund says via Skype, the pledges don't go far enough.
There's already a big gap between what's needed to really fight climate change and what many countries and industries are doing today. We do need to see more urgency, more political will, not necessarily just from the United Nations, but actually from the countries that are doing the negotiations.
Member nations will meet in Paris later this year to try to sign off on a new international carbon-cutting agreement. For VOA's Greenbeat, I'm Rebecca Ward.
This is VOA's International Edition, coming to you from Washington. Are you one of those people who always worries and sees the negative side of things? Maybe you can't seem to ever say something positive or find a way to be happy? Author Jim Jensen might just have the right prescription to turn your attitude around. My colleague Susan Yaki spoke with Jensen about his new book called Seven Keys to Unlock Your Full Potential.
Let me talk about the first key. The first key is to understand the true relationship between the conscious and subconscious areas of our mind. These are not two different minds, but rather they're two spheres of the same mind. And most of us have been educated to understand that the subconscious handles our bodily functions. It grows our hair, our nails, will help heal a wound, digests our food. But many people are not aware that the subconscious is also a servo mechanism that works on our behalf 24/7, and it carries out what we command it and what the information we give to it by the conscious area of the mind, and will work just as hard to achieve something that might be negative as something positive. For example, we use a metaphor in the book to visualize an ocean liner going across the sea, and the conscious area of the mind would be like the captain who's up in the helm of the ship, barking out signals to the crew, full speed ahead, port starboard, 10 degrees north, whatever. And the crew is like the subconscious, which could be down in the engine room of the ship, below the water level, can't even see where the ship is going. And they just carry out the orders and say, aye, aye, sir, not minding whether they run the ship into the rocks, hit another vessel, or get it safely to its destination. So this is working, again, on our behalf 24/7. And Therefore, it's not so important what we say to others or what others say to us, but it's extremely important what we say to ourselves.
That's a little trick I have when I have a really difficult day, several shows or something like that, and I wake up and I think, oh, no, I've got so much work to do. And then I just say to myself, hey, it's a challenge. You can do it. It'll be fun. And it changes your whole thing. It really is true. It's all in your head.
Exactly. The second key is the incredible power of our own self-talk. And again, although people, when I mention this, will be aware of this, they don't consciously think about it, that we, all of us, talk to ourselves all day long at the rate of 150 to 300 words a minute, over 50,000 thoughts a day, which is called self-talk. I mean, your listeners right now are talking to themselves about what they're hearing. They're assessing what they think about this. They're thinking about the rest of the day. What are they doing for lunch? Where are they going to dinner? I mean, all these thoughts that run through our brain. So again, as I just said a few minutes ago, that we need to be very mindful of what we say to ourselves. And when we catch ourselves, just like you say, gosh, it's a tough day or I've got too much. So wait a minute, time out, cancel. You know, it's a great day. I've got plenty of energy. I've got plenty of time. And again, re-instruct the subconscious is like the hardware in a computer. And the conscious mind is like the software. It's just data input. We come into the world as a totally empty vessel. We don't have an opinion, thought, belief, attitude about anything. But through well-intending parents, older siblings, coaches, teachers, whatever, we get a lot of data input that begins to shape who we become. But the good news is we have the capacity to reprogram or change any of that data we want through the use of our self-talk. So those are the two kind of combinations of the relationship between the conscious and subconscious, and then being fully, fully aware of how we talk to ourselves. And then we have additional keys in the book that give instructions on how to properly do that and how to properly reprogram the subconscious.
Jim Jensen, author of Seven Keys to Unlock Your Full Potential, talking with International Edition Susan Yockey. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Any fan of hip-hop music knows authenticity is a big deal. But a recent conflict between Meek Mill and Toronto-based MC Drake flared up over whether Drake writes all his rhymes. Inquiring minds want to know, and so does International Edition's David Byrd, who spoke with Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee to find out what's up.
Let's start at the beginning.
Yes.
Okay. Meek Mill, who...
In the beginning, there was the Meek one.
There was the Meek one, who, better known as Nicki Minaj's boyfriend.
Okay.
For people who may not be into contemporary hip-hop music.
All right.
Anyway, he has a new project, and Drake, who almost everyone knows, he's hugely successful, Drake did a cameo on the project. And so Meek Mill was a little upset about the fact that Drake did not promote the project the way that, according to Meek Mill, they had originally agreed he would.
Mm.
And so he took to Twitter and said, you know, I'm angry with Drake essentially for not promoting it, but the reason he didn't promote it is because Drake doesn't write his own rhymes.
Okay.
That's like the worst thing you could say about...
Now, Meek said this about
artist.
Drake.
This is what Meek said about Drake.
And I understand it's only like one verse that was in dispute or something.
On his record. But he kind of implied that it wasn't just the verse on Meek's record that was not written by Drake, but implied that it was also, there were also verses on some of his own, meaning Drake's records, that had not been written by Drake.
Now, why is this a beef, though? I mean, singers have been singing other people's words for, you know, centuries.
Right. Well, in hip-hop, it's a little different. You can kind of look at hip-hop the way you would poetry. So it is a very personal expression of someone's experience, someone's feeling. It is. It started off as being and continues to be in its purest form authentic.
Right.
Authenticity is very important, as you said in the beginning. So while it has always also been a collaborative process, most hip hop artists, most hip hop writers, people who write raps, do so about their own experiences and wouldn't necessarily hand it over to someone else to do. Now that hip hop has become more popular, and people are writing hits as opposed to just writing songs, you will have folks who know what it takes to create a hit come in and write verses.
Ghostwriting.
Yeah, ghostwriting.
They called it ghosting.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Drake was being accused of. But Drake has come out.
Ghosting instead of toasting.
Instead of toasting. Right, there you go. Such a funny man. But so, yeah, so that's why it's such a, it's a huge deal, because Drake does present himself as someone who is authentic.
All right. Well, we will see if the beef continues. If you have any comments about this, you can send Shauna a tweet. She's at VOA Lady DJ. You can also hit her up at VOA underscore music. And you can send us a tweet at VOA underscore IE. Listen also for Shauna in the Soul Lounge on www.voanews.com.
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team. Yeah, I done kept it real from the jump. Living at my mama's house, we'd argue every month. I was trying to get it on my own. Working all night.
That'll do it for this edition of International Edition. You can access more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
500 of sub-Saharan Africa's most promising young leaders have gathered here in Washington to meet with President Barack Obama and leading U.S. entrepreneurs, government officials, and civil society representatives. The three-day summit, August 3rd, 4th, and 5th, will do more than that, however. It will also underscore our nation's commitment to Africa's people, democracy, and governance, and highlight our commitment to addressing issues that affect us all. Increased engagement with the nations of Africa is a high priority of U.S. foreign policy. President Obama has emphasized how important this relationship is, beginning with his traveling to Ghana soon after taking office in 2009. The presidential summit follows 6 weeks of academic study and leadership training for the 500 fellows at 20 institutions of higher education across the United States as part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship. The event will also feature a town hall with President Obama, a plenary session with members of Congress, and breakout discussions with leaders in business, government, international development, and non-governmental organizations. Forging stronger personal connections among these young leaders advances America's and Africa's many, many shared priorities. It also fosters further future engagement and deepens the partnership between the American and African peoples as we both pursue a better future for us all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It's 4.